When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
All right, it's a Thursday, of course. Richard Fitzwilliams joins me for Movies and You. Good afternoon, Richard. How are you?
Oh, very well indeed.
Great. And lots happening, and we've got a couple of great films to look at today, no doubt.
Well, we have a couple of movies. I'd certainly call one of them great, I think. 2001, A Space Odyssey, a wonderful decision to re-release it 50 years after Kubrick made it. And it's interesting that at the same time they were making The Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston.
Yeah, fantastic. 50 years ago, wow. We'll talk about that in a moment. We're going to look at Ocean's 8 to start off with, and then we'll come back to that to re-release and some of the interesting pointers around that re-release. Ocean's 11 goes back to the 1960s with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and of course we've had the re-release with George Clooney over the years and Brad Pitt. Where does this fit in?
It's a lucrative franchise. I mean, this is the female version of Ocean's 11, really. Danny Ocean, as you mentioned, was originally played by Frank Sinatra, then by George Clooney. And here we've got Sandra Bullock taking over as his sister Debbie, who's in fact let out of jail, promises to be good, but of course she spent her entire time, over 5 years, inside planning it's an absolutely massive heist.
Yeah.
Because the Met Gala is probably New York's most star-studded event, and since the chief star will be wearing a $150 million necklace, what could be more appropriate than that should be that it should be stolen? And indeed, the team has to be assembled to do this. And I mean, I have to say, there's a lot of fun about this movie, because it's an obvious one. You're not going to get a great deal of subtlety, and you're certainly not going to get, I have to say, I think we should have had a bit more excitement in it. But having said that, you have got Sandra Bullock. I'm not the greatest of admirers, but many are. You've also got her girlfriend, her partner in crime, Lou, played by Kate Blanchett, who's always good.
Yeah.
And you've got the team making up 8. No spoilers for me, so I'm not going through the entire team.
But quite a cast.
There's a reason for that.
Needless to say, Richard, it's there's some big names in there, isn't there?
Well, a hell of a big cast. I mean, obviously, Helena Bonham Carter. I have to say that as Rose Wilde, a fashion designer heavily in debt, who is part and parcel of this scheme, she does irritate me when she's cooky, because she's frequently acts and dresses as though she were a bit of a tramp. And even if she's a designer here, that doesn't alter the fact that she enjoys looking a bit lunatic. There are chances to see, in fact, all the team tug up to the nines. And I have to say, Rihanna, as a technical genius nine ball, looks absolutely fantastic in a glorious red gown, which I would recommend to anybody. And there's Sarah Paulson, there's Mindy Kaling. Yes, top stars, and indeed top stars were cut out of this. According to Wikipedia, Matt Damon's scene was excised.
But he still got paid, though, didn't he?
I don't doubt that that was the case. Damon Lewis, too. And I mean, it's interesting that cameos from Anna Wintour to Serena Williams. This is glossy, glitzy fun.
Yeah.
Director Gary Ross never intended it to be anything else. And, James Corden is there as well as a detective, and he doesn't get very far, I must say. The movie, in fact, doesn't intend tend to get very far. Recruiting this gang is a lot of fun, and also the evening itself, you can see gorgeous gowns, you can see spectacular decor, you even see a bit of the Metropolitan Museum, which I have to say I love. Yeah. And yes, there's Claude Becker, who is accompanying Anne Hathaway. She plays Daphne Kluger, who's the star of the gala, and actually wears this necklace. He's played by Richard Armitage, and he is the ex-boyfriend of Debbie, played by Sandra Bullock, and put her in jail. That wasn't a wise thing to do.
It's one of those films, is it, Richard, that you can't, it'd be like, you know, you're going to watch a James Bond film, you know what you're going to get. Is it one of those that you watch an Ocean's 11, Ocean's 8, whatever it's going to be, you know, really, it's a bit of a romp and a bit of a, you know, a bit of fun, really, isn't it?
That sums it up. It's fluff. It's fun. It's amusing. I got a couple of twists, and I certainly wasn't convinced by either of them. It's smooth.
You've
it's
seen
slick,
too many fluffy movies, Richard.
That may be, yes, perhaps that's true. And more wit, and it could have been more exciting. But you know, there's no point complaining about a movie as safe as this, because it knows it's got a pretty captive audience, and it is most amusing. I suppose you could argue there's a feminist twist to it.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Women.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the point is, quite honestly, that it's just, it's made as a bit of fun, and it is amusing, and they are planning a sequel, just in case you had any doubts.
Well, I was going to ask you a little bit about that side of things, because, of course, we did see the all-female Ghostbuster cast recently.
Which got
years.
A lot... Yes, I wasn't, I have to say, particularly impressed. But then, again, so much fuss about sequels. The point is that they do tend to make money, as we've seen with so many of the Marvel movies. Mm. And there's a lot of interest, if you know characters, in following them on to the next movie and then the next and then the next. Of course, they can be disastrous and they can be pretty ghastly, but I do notice that, you know, whether it's Spider-Man or Thor or the Rocket Raccoon, they attract a certain, you've got the fans.
Well, talk about making money, Richard, I'll mention that in a moment, but just before we do that, ratings out of 5 on that one then?
I think, I mean, it was sort of going to get a 3 from the first 20 minutes, and that's precisely the way it's ended up. I would say that a sequel could bring it definitely to 4 if you have a bit more excitement in the plot, a bit more drama, and a few more wisecracks, but there are quite a few. There's quite a lot to laugh at.
Well, talking about making money, I went recently to see Han Solo, Star Wars Story, and because I know you've actually gave it quite a relatively good...
I did, and I do not repent, but I'm afraid to say what you're going to say, and I know what it is.
What's that?
You're going to say that it has been a disaster at the box office.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I went to watch it, and it was one of those evenings where my wife said, go and watch it at the cinema, because you'll regret it so if you miss it. So I went, and I sat in the cinema on my own for the first time ever, the whole theatre to myself, sat there, watched the whole movie, and there we are. But I felt thoroughly enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it, so...
But you've just already cast it into the outer abyss of outer space, I'm afraid, by saying you sat there alone.
Well, this is in the second language, of course. It was in Spain, so it was a Monday night. So you throw that into the equation. It's probably run its... it's probably towards the end of its lifespan on at the cinema here in Spain. But
I'm afraid it's towards the end of its lifespan at the box office in the United States. That's a serious matter. I mean, it's already made, in theory, a lot of money, but it hasn't because of the huge amounts spent in it, $250 million plus, and, of course, the budget for publicity, all of that. I think the point is you bring out so many Star Wars movies and you expect the fans to go to all of them. Of course, why not? I mean, I think it was very good. I agree with you. I mean, we totally agree. It's only that empty cinema, even if it is the worst possible time, it's a metaphor for what's happening to it, unfortunately, because of the vast cost involved.
I mean, you talk about films that may have flopped over the years, like Waterworld with Kevin Costner, maybe a lot of money spent on that. But I think it'll probably go down in history as a good film, you know, and over the years people will, you know, grow to like it and will watch it, you know, on Sky or wherever it may be, on Netflix eventually, who knows. But I think obviously it will eventually make its money back, no doubt.
Well, this has happened. I mean, even Cleopatra made its money back, in theory, anyway, when it was sold to television, and eventually, after all the years, and yes, Heaven's Gate and Waterworld, and Titanic, of course, was supposed to be conceived when it was being made. There were rumors it would be disastrous, of course, but the giant success, sometimes you invest a lot, even if you spend a huge amount, and you reap vast sums. There's no doubt at all that I'm afraid at the moment Solo is in a bad place.
I'm sure Disney have got a bit of money stacked away to cover that one.
So putting it mild.
Right, let's look at a film that over the years certainly hasn't been a flop, and it's kind of been a genre maker in many ways, I think. Let's look at 2001 Space Odyssey, 50th anniversary, and it's been re-released again for us to watch and enjoy.
Yes, it's in quite a few cinemas here, and I mean, it's perhaps the greatest sci-fi movie ever made, and it was certainly groundbreaking. It did win an Oscar for visual effects, and it's one of Stanley Kubrick's masterpieces. I would also include Clockwork Orange and Barry Lyndon among them. And I mean, some of the greatest images in cinema, especially when the tribes of apes fight each other at the beginning, and everybody knows from legend of the ape discovers using a bone as a weapon and throws it up in triumph, and that blends into a spaceship to the tune of the Blue Danube. That is immortal.
Again, you say that it was before Star Wars, before Close Encounters. It really was kind of groundbreaking in that respect.
Yes, and apparently, I mean, Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke worked on the script, and with Kubrick working is, it's quite an experience. No question that there's always been ambiguity as to the symbolism of the black monolith, first discovered by the apes, and secondly discovered in various parts of the film, where there's a mission to investigate a planet, and the monolith is subsequently discovered, and then it, of course, turns up again climactically. There's another monolith, which, again, has been the subject of so much interpretation. It's one of the fascinating aspects of this movie, is that Kubrick was always pretty ambiguous as to what it meant. It meant very much what you saw in it, but word of mouth spread that it was a challenging movie, that its use of special effects as opposed to what we can see today in every Marvel movie, and frankly, pretty thoughtlessly very often. This was so beautifully crafted in a scene where a pod to investigate a monolith crosses space, this kaleidoscope of color. I mean, this was an absolute triumph. There's no question about it. Also, the ironies in this movie, where we have a space plane taking Dr. Hayward Floyd, played by William Sylvester, to a space station, to Clavius Space, where the rumors of an epidemic, and then a mission to investigate the artifact on a planet, discovers a monolith, and subsequently the spacecraft Discovery is bound for Jupiter. And here we have Dr. Frank Baumann, played by Gary Lockwood, and Dr. Frank Poole, played by Cair Dullier, who's always been associated with this movie because, of course, we see quite a lot of him. The operations in the craft are controlled by HAL. Now, the interesting aspect of HAL was that HAL seems more capable of emotion, some have commented, than the humans in this movie, especially since, as you know, there are difficulties to transpire.
I can't do that, Dave, as one of the lines I remember. But with Stanley Kubrick films, there's no accident with the scenery, or with the scene in particular. You look at a scene, you think, that's arty. That's definitely arty. You can see what he's doing there. It really is quite something to watch one of his films. And very much from... I was reading some of the reviews on the re-release, and people talking about the re-release of the trailer, talking about the re-release. And there's still a lot of people that love his movies out there, isn't there? Still got such a following.
There's no question is following is still amazing, and that this movie always had a lot of controversy. What the monolith actually meant, it appeared to indicate a leap forward of some sort, but whether that is in fact into the apocalypse, what future did Kubrick envisage for the human race? What actually does that very unusual climactic scene with the, shall we say, the unusual image at the end, I don't want to give any spoilers to some anyone who hasn't seen it, is that I've always thought that was, for me it had sinister connotations, but not for everyone. There's no question that Kubrick having made Dr. Strangelove did, there's only a hint of regarding the Cold War in this. There were ideas in it that could have ended in an obviously apocalyptic ending, which he scrapped. So making it as challenging as it is has, I think, added to its greatness. As you say, the craft of the way the movie was made, the photography, the colors, the humans, yes, there's not much dialogue, but what dialogue there is and what Hal adds to it is absolutely fascinating and often very chilling, but it's always so tremendously atmospheric, and it's a dazzling achievement to have made a movie like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Warner Brothers, who are re-releasing it, have done something quite unusual, and that's, I think, don't ask me the technical side of this, but they're re-releasing it with a 70mm film, which kind of gives you the feel that you're going to be watching it as it would have been received back 50 years ago. And there's a whole load of technical stuff with probably geeky people behind it that have come up with this idea. But it's just one of those other ideas which is probably going to grab people's attention as they look back. It's hard to believe, isn't it, 50 years ago? What a groundbreaking film.
Unbelievable. It is 50 years, and in that time, of course, science fiction, which was, I mean, a lot of the science fiction movies at the time were pretty corny. Now, of course, it's the genre that attracts the vast audiences with these sci-fi epics, the Marvel movies, Star Wars, and so forth, and there's so many of them, and indeed you could also make the complaint, and it's quite an interesting comparison with the 1960s. You had the epics, you had musical, and of course there were obviously films of all types, but this was the first groundbreaking sci-fi movie which really was taken seriously and still is analyzed in every aspect of it. Now you've got movies that seem to me, yes, they're sci-fi movies, but they seem to be so mindless.
Absolutely. And that certainly isn't the case on this one. I don't know whether we even dare rate this out of five, Richard. I'll leave it to you.
Let's leave the rating to Kubrick.
Yes, absolutely. Richard, fantastic.
I mean, were he here, he'd agree as a perfectionist that there's ever a five-star movie that's going to be it.
And who would we be to argue with him?
You wouldn't argue with Kubrick, and if you did, you would have to be waiting a long, long time, because you certainly, as a perfectionist, you could wait years. Yes, indeed.
Richard, fantastic. If anybody wants to find you online, how can they do that?
It's www.richardfitzwilliams.com, Twitter at @RFitzWilliams, and next week we have a new Gemma Arterton drama. It's called The Escape, and also a movie by that most challenging and mysterious of French directors, François Ozon, L'Ambat Double.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Richard. As always, we'll look forward to that. You take care.